Hey, Zero Block 30 listeners, you can find us every Tuesday and Friday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. Prime members can also listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Are you looking for relief, relaxation, or to party on the motherfucking moon? Then check out 3Chi's new True Strains lineup of cannabis vapes and gummies tailored for specific effects. And the best part? It's delivered straight to your door. Visit 3Chi.com. That's 3CHI.com. And for a limited time, get 20% off with the code BARSTOOL20.
This episode of Zero Block 30 is brought to you by a book that's coming out. I'm not usually a huge book guy. You guys know me. I'm not that learned of a human being. But this book, it seems like it's going to be great. Full disclosure, I haven't read it yet. But just from what I've seen on different clips, it sounds like it's going to be a funnier version of On Killing. And I kind of liked On Killing, but it got too scientific at points. This one said that it is scientific. She's the most entertaining writer in science. That's what the bestsellers from the London Times said, that she's the best entertaining writer in science. So that seems like a pretty good start. If you could talk about shit that she's going to talk about in this book and be entertaining, it's going to be great. She's best known for her work in Stiff, which is What Becomes of Human Cadavers. She also wrote a book on Packing for Mars. It's the practical side of how astronauts would survive in space. And in Grunt, the book that we're talking about here, Grunt, that's a big-time military word, which means infantry guy or girl now. She's right in her element, talking about stink bombs from World War II, testing earplugs in simulated war zones, and burning the midnight oil with the crew of a nuclear submarine, and how they get them to stay awake, why they're so sleep-deprived, just all kinds of science that goes into military life. It's meticulously researched, beautifully written, and disturbingly funny, says the Boston Globe. Find out more at Grunt. @maryroach.net. That's Grunt @maryroach.net. Cue my theme music. I got home from Disney World, which if we have time at the end of the episode, we'll talk about that little after action report. But I just got back from Disney. It always feels so fucking good to be home.
Always. Always. Whether you're deployed or deployed on a mission to Disney, it doesn't matter. It feels good to get home.
It felt like a deployment to Disney too.
Because the level of planning you did, it was almost like you wrote out an op board for this mission down to Disney. And it sounds like your wife's pretty squared away, so things were ready to go. But nonetheless, good to be home.
Yeah, my wife definitely was the S2 officer of that, which is the intel officer. She got all the planning, made all the planning. And she just did everything, man, She always does. Like, anytime family stuff, planning, she is the one that holds the fort down. But I don't want to spend too much time at the top of the show talking about that, because there is a lot of shit that's happening in the world. This is going to be a pretty politics-free episode, too. I'm going to start giving you guys warning at the beginning of the show.
So you don't turn off.
Yeah, so you don't turn it off. So you're like, fuck these guys, back at it again with the politics talk. There's a little politics involved, but one of the things I wanted to touch on, I wrote the blog today. I just found out about it. A Canadian, mind you. A Canadian broke the world record for the longest sniper shot ever.
How far was it?
2.2 fucking miles, man.
That's pure insanity.
2.2 miles. Connor and I were talking about it before we started recording. The 2.2 miles is so long, man. So yeah. Long. Like, yeah. Imagine most of you listening are probably at least in your 20s. Imagine just going to run 2.2 miles at this point in your life.
Right. That's going to take a bit.
Yeah. Honestly, for me, it would probably take me about 20 minutes at this point.
Mm-hmm.
It would take me a while. And it got there in 10 seconds. But imagine, again, how long 10 seconds is, because that's what the military sources said, that the bullet was actually in the air for 10 seconds. And if you've ever spent any time on a firing range like you and I have, 10 seconds is a long time to pull the trigger and expect people to be in the same exact spot, like the same body size spot.
Yeah, no, it's crazy, because when you think about like qualifying on a standard range, you're hitting targets anywhere from 5 meters away to 300 meters away. Even when you're hitting those 300 meters.
500 for us, but whatever.
Okay, sorry. Either way, all right, so we'll go 500.
With iron sights.
With iron sights, 500 meters. Even if you're hitting a target 500 meters away, that's hitting pretty almost instantaneously. So, and you pointed out greatly in your blog, how many things have to go right to make that shot? Because, yeah, granted, you have a scope on that rifle, but you have to be extremely still. You have to factor in weather. You have to factor in the rotation of the Earth. I mean, there are...
Yeah, let's pull it back before we go that far. Let's pull it back some. When we... You said 300 meters for you guys. It's 500 meters right. for us. Whenever you're talking about with an M16 or M4, and you're talking about iron sights, and you get on target, if you breathe too deeply and you pull the trigger at the wrong time and it's not a smooth trigger pull, you will 100% miss
Absolutely.
The target.
Absolutely. And
if you just barely pull it just a little bit to the right or the left, at that distance, you're not hitting it.
It's unbelievable how little error you can have.
You have no... At 500 meters on a rifle qualification, you have very, very little room for error. You
right.
know, like, as soon as I pull the trigger, based on how my face feels, based on how my body feels with the weapon, based on how my fingers feel, I know for a fact when the target is dropping back down into the pits, what we call it, dropping back down in the pits to get marked, I know if I hit the target or not.
Mm-hmm.
And that's at 500 meters. If I make a tiny little... You have to be perfect, man. Like the definition of perfect. There's this form in psychology or in philosophy called the Platonic view of the forms. And Plato says that there is a perfect form of everything. Like, for example, there's a perfect basketball. In this mythical world, there's a perfect form of a basketball where the basketball, the little knobs on the basketball are absolutely perfect.
Mm.
The divots in between the section of the basketball are absolutely perfect. This shot is the Platonic view of the forms for shots for a sniper.
That's a pretty deep way to look at it, but I like it.
I mean, he went damn near 40% further than the record.
Yeah. No, it's unbelievable. I mean, when you try to like start wrapping your brain around it, you gave some perspective. That's like if you're in the Empire State Building and you're sniping me sitting in my apartment in Hoboken.
I've been thinking about this since I wrote the blog. Like I could have gone on forever. Like I've been walking around my apartment. You know, like when you're mad at your significant other and you're like driving and you're thinking about what you can say to them whenever you're done. And then
right.
you've been driving for like 15, 20 minutes and then you're just like... And then, like, that's how I feel
about this
shot.
Yeah.
But I've been thinking about it so much. I'm, like, putting it into perspective for our listeners. And then think about how far it is from the Empire State Building to fucking Hoboken, New Jersey.
Right.
Like, that's a long ways.
Right. No, it's unbelievable. I mean, I tried to figure it out. It's about 35 football fields. So try to wrap your brain around that. I mean, the human eye, unless you're just standing on a flat piece of ground, you can't even see that far.
No, yeah. Like when I watched this show when I was flying sometime with that's called Geniuses, and it had Stephen Hawking on it.
Mm-hmm.
And Stephen Hawking was trying to explain how you could tell the curve of the Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And he went like a mile and a quarter or something like that across a lake that was in Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever people were a mile and a quarter across the lake, he had them hold a balloon on the shore.
Sure.
And when they were a mile away, you could know. Longer see, even though it appeared to be flat, you could no longer see the balloon because it was so far down, like because
yeah.
the Earth curves at such a rate. I was reading that this shooter had to aim up because of the gravitational pull of the Earth and the rotational pull of the Earth. He had to aim up 5 football fields. So he had to aim up 500 yards to make it where just gravity would pull it down into the ground.
Yeah, let's not forget about that. Like, you shoot something that far. Well, like, when a bullet leaves a weapon, it doesn't just stay on that plane. Gravity starts, kicks in right away. So
yep.
5 football fields higher, that's ridiculous.
Even at 500 yards, you could see the arc of the bullet. Like, if you're aiming straight, I'm pretty sure it's like 14 feet. If you're shooting flat at 500 meters, it's got to basically be up 14 feet.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're standing in the middle and somebody's they're shooting at 500 yards away with iron sights, you could be standing at like 250 yards. They could shoot their target that's in, as a crow flies, it's straight.
Mm-hmm.
But in reality, it's got to curve up over your head. You'd be fine.
Yeah. I've tried to wrap my brain around this shot and I can't do it. I really can't. Because then I start to think from an artillery perspective, when we're shooting that far, the math that is involved in shooting something at that distance and the trajectory and the physics, and for one man to just use a rifle with, you know, I'd imagine some pretty advanced sights, But you know what? People are like, oh, he has sights and da da da. You know what? You still got to be so talented.
For 10 seconds, though.
Yeah, you still got to be so damn talented.
You can actually see.
Yeah.
But
you got
to
be
so
talented.
You have to be like the human element is perfection, too. Like, you can't just give that to science. You know, the human element of the shooter is still perfect. Mm-hmm. I got it right here. 490 meters at the bullet is going to drop over 10 seconds. 490 meters.
Wow.
That's 5 football fields. It's going to fall. The bullet is traveling 1,636 miles per hour. Even if you were shooting a 40-mic grenade out of like a 203 or something like that, if you could make a 203 reach out that far like a grenade, you wouldn't be sure in 10 seconds that you would be inside the killer casualty radius at 10 seconds.
No.
I mean, because I could think about just as a casualty stroll, if you didn't know somebody was fucking shooting at you when you're walking down the street, the distance that you're really traveling in 10 seconds, it's pretty far.
Yeah. No. And, you know, we're talking about the human element. Do you think when he hit his target, he just said, sorry?
Yeah. I mean, probably. I don't know what he said. I think that you fucking shit yourself. Like, if you do it because you know you're a goddamn legend.
Yeah.
Like, that is legendary shit. Breaking any record by 40% is wild.
Mm-hmm.
Breaking that type of record that's... And people have been snipers for over 100 years.
Right.
Like, it's not like it's a new thing. Like,
no, and, you know, our weapons have gotten better.
Our technology is better and the round quality and shit like that.
But still.
But still.
I don't know. I'm trying to find more words. And, I just have to, you know, tip your cap and just say, wow, that's very impressive. That is very, very extraordinary. So.
Yeah. It's like if you took the Kentucky Derby and made the track not round, and you put two in a row, that's how far it is.
Two of them. Jesus.
pretty wild.
Dude.
Damn wild, man.
It is.
So that, like, we got really onto the military side this week, like, thinking about not just this sniper shot that I found out today, but I also saw a great text message that reminded me of life in the military.
Oh, yeah.
So, so much. I'm going to read it to you. I got it from Terminal Lance. You guys will remember Max from Terminal Lance that came on a couple weeks ago. If you didn't hear that episode, Max is a fucking hilarious dude.
Mm-hmm.
Probably the leading voice for Marines that there is. He posted this on Twitter today. He got a text message from a sergeant, I guess, that sent it in. The text message from a young PFC says, "Good morning, Sergeant. This is PFC Hines. Myself and the rest of the 13 TAC, which is probably a school, I would assume, are headed off to base to the airport. Should I text every 2 hours?" The response is the most Sergeant of Marines responses that you could possibly have. He only replied to the PFC, "Go fuck yourself." And the PFC gave the only response that he could, "Aye, aye, Sergeant. Good morning, Sergeant." So he gave like the appropriate, like, "I have been dismissed completely" response. You were talking about some things that reminded you of. What was one of those things?
Well, it was just funny, just because, I mean, there's sometimes business that needs to be told to senior non-commissioned officers, and then there's sometimes things that you don't need to tell. And I was just reminded one time anytime I came back from a mission in Iraq, I would have to then go back to my office and write up an entire after-action report. And that usually, I don't know, depending on the mission, took me anywhere from 30 minutes to an hour. And, you know, you have to detail where you went, what you did, what happened, every little thing that happened. Mostly.
And if you're watching Band of Brothers, Winders does that.
Right. Yeah.
Like,
and
we'll talk about that when we get into that portion later on in the show. But that, where Winders is at the typewriter, that's exactly what Khan's is talking about.
Right. Yeah. No, that's exactly what made me think of this story. And then it was funny that you sent me that text with the PFC today, because it jogged my memory last night when I was watching the episode of the AAR, and I was getting ready to go write an AAR one time, and I had this PFC, DMARS, and he goes, "Sir, where are you going now? Like, what do you do after the mission?" And before I could get a word out, my guy Becerra, who eventually, now he'd be Sergeant Becerra, he was a specialist at the time, and he goes, he goes and does officer shit. Don't ask fucking stupid questions. And I was just like, I just kind of like looked at him and like nodded my head, and I was like, that's basically the best answer I could give you for the level of understanding that you have. Like, yeah, I go do my thing. So,
and it's funny because that's you established that early on, even as like a corporal of Marines. When I had PFCs or Lance Corporal of Marines, when they'd be like, "Hey, what are you doing, corporal?" I'd be like, "Fucking corporal shit, man.
Yeah.
Like, don't worry about me." Like,
yeah.
If you're the lower rank in the military, you just better not just ask like what you're doing. Like, right. You just assume that what I'm doing right now is what I'm doing. And if I'm doing something later that's going to be different than what I'm doing right now, you're probably never going to know about it.
Yeah, and I mean, I had a pretty open policy. Like, I had talked to my guys all the time. But like you said, there's just some things you don't need to know what I'm going to do right now. Don't you worry your pretty little head. You just do what it is that you have to do after a mission.
Just go fucking clean something, dude. Yeah,
exactly. There is something right now, I promise you, it needs to be cleaned. Go take care of that.
I use so many of the same lines on my kids as I used to my old Marines. Like, whenever I'm doing something, I'm cooking in the kitchen, my kids come down and they're like, hey, Daddy, I'm bored. I'm like, oh, you're fucking bored. Good. If you're bored, I got something for that. Like, you want to wash the baseboards? You want to go clean your room? If you don't have anything to do, I got a whole list.
I got a list of stuff that can be done right now.
When you finish this, let's come back. We'll make another one. I don't want you to be bored and find something to entertain yourself. Yeah. Please come back again.
Because that is when lower enlisted soldiers and Marines, sailors, airmen, all alike, that is when they get in trouble, when they have nothing else to do. So, you know, sometimes you got to give them something to do to just keep them out of trouble.
And it's dumb shit. Like, we posted a picture on our Instagram of dudes fucking raking the sand in Arizona.
That was great. Like, absolutely no point to that.
None. Because as soon as the wind blows, it's going to go.
Yep.
Like, everything's going to move. And it blows all the time in the desert, which makes that fucking shot that he shot in Afghanistan even more impressive.
Yeah.
Like, the wind changes is... I can't do it, dude.
I mean, you know what else, too? I'm thinking about, like...
It's put me in a fucking pretzel, for real.
Really? Because, like, I think, like, at that distance, too, like, the humidity in the air would affect the round.
Yeah, everything affects
everything.
The round.
Yeah. Yeah, but, I mean, just,
the
like...
The smallest little thing, like, what you have to go through, when I did, like, a very basic sniper course. Like, very, very basic. Mm-hmm. Nothing like these guys went through at all. When they were telling me all the things that could affect it, even when you're talking about a 1,000-meter shot, it blew my fucking mind, man.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's like legit straight up math. You have to be good at math to be a sniper. Like, you really do.
People would probably just think, like, oh, you just got to shoot a lot and get good with your weapon. No, you got to be able to factor in so many other variables. It's unbelievable.
Like, whenever you're talking about just the little clicks, like one click over this course, it's just, if you do one little click, even going back to the M4, M16, whenever you're doing one little click, it could move you 2 or 3 inches for 500 yards. A little half a click will move you 4 inches, 6 inches. When you're talking about 2 miles, a half of a little click is going to move you feet.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so everything about that weapon had to be perfect. It blows my fucking mind, man.
And you think about it, too, like, just from the standpoint of you thinking about the human body, and, you know, if you're 10 meters away, it seems like it's pretty easy to hit the human body. How small of a target does that get? At that distance. I mean, how small of a target does that get at 600 meters?
Like, with the naked eye, you can't see that.
Right.
There's no way.
Right.
You can't see it. Probably even with a regular scope that you would put on, like, an M4, mm-hmm. M16, you couldn't see it.
Definitely not. So, geeking out a little bit about this, but it's wildly impressive.
But it's a world record, dude, in our field that we love. So, if you don't like it, thanks for listening to the last 15 fucking minutes. I have a take before we get into Band of Brothers. We have a couple more things to do before we get into Band of Brothers, but I have a take.
What do you got?
You might disagree. I've been hesitant. I thought about it first on the plane. Like, it popped into my head on the plane, but I'm ready for it.
Okay.
What's the dude who plays Winters? What's his actual name?
Damian Lewis.
Damian Lewis. Here's the take.
Okay.
Damian Lewis is the greatest television actor of all time.
I don't think I could live with that. I don't know that I would disagree with that when you consider
because
some of the roles
he
he's
has been in Band of Brothers. He was fucking fantastic in Band of Brothers.
Yeah.
He was fantastic in Homeland, which is another top five of my favorite shows.
Yep.
And he was fantastic in Billions.
Yeah, he's killing it right now in Billions. You know,
he has three shows that are legit,
like, all-timers.
Iconic shows.
Yeah, well, we'll see how Billions stands the test of time, but right now as it's going, it's a very respected and popular
show.
You could
have two series like Homeland and Band of Brothers.
Yeah.
Put pretty high up there.
No, I absolutely agree. Did you know he's British?
Yep.
Okay.
It blew my fucking mind the first time I heard him.
First time I heard him giving, like, a normal interview, I was like, wait a second. I never would have guessed that.
And some of the listeners might be thinking, hey, chaps, why are you talking about Band of Brothers shit right before? Because you can watch all of those shows on Hulu.
Boom.
Hulu is the place where I'm watching all my shit right now, man. Like, I'm watching Band of Brothers through Hulu and Amazon. doesn't even compare. Amazon doesn't compare to Hulu. They have all the shows, they have brand new shows that are great. If you haven't seen Handmaid's Tale, I'm almost done with it. I've been talking about that some. Handmaid's Tale makes me legit nervous when I watch it because I don't want anything bad to happen to Offred or Junebug or whatever you want to call her. I feel so, so nervous. Be nervous with me. I want to talk about it, but not enough people are watching it with me at the same time. I wish I had a podcast where I could just talk about Handmaid's Tale. It is that good. Even if you paid for Hulu just for that, you should do it. You can also watch live TV. Like if you're a cord cutter, you can watch ESPN, ESPN2, ESPNU, NBC, Fox, Nat Geo, which has a ton of Alaska shows, which I'm a huge fan of. Shout out to Alaska. Sprout, if you have a kid. Kids love fucking Sprout. They got TNT for basketball. They got everything, dude. Live sports, USA, Viceland, SEC Network for sports. They got everything. Get Hulu today. Hulu, Hulu, Hulu. Go to Hulu.com to start your free trial today. Another big news story this week was the young man named Otto Warmbier.
Warmbier. I believe it's pronounced Warmbier. Warmbier. Yeah.
Okay. Otto Warmbier. How he came back after being captured at 16 months, right?
I thought it was 18.
18 months, something like that. And tragically, he died this week. So that brought about a big to-do of what should the Trump administration do as far as North Korea because this young man died. Connor, what are your thoughts?
Well, my thoughts are when you're dealing with a country like North Korea, and they're that volatile. I mean, I don't understand why he went over there in the first place. I have a problem with him going over there in the first place. You know, we still, we haven't had a good relationship with North Korea since we had the ceasefire in the Korean War. We never even, you know, ended that war, technically. We're still just at a ceasefire. So, you know, we maintain a presence, a very, very heavy presence in South Korea militarily for a reason. And for him to just go over there, that kind of just perplexes me. I don't see any reason. It's a wonder Dennis Rodman goes over there and comes back every time. So I don't even know what he was doing over there.
I kind of feel the same way. I mean, obviously, when anybody dies, you want to talk about it.
I feel horrible that he died.
Right. But at the same time, like expecting the Trump administration or even the Obama administration before that to take extreme steps to go get somebody who is on their own accord. The odd part about this to me is that there are certain people who will say, Bogue Bergdahl shouldn't have been traded for all those guys from Guantanamo Bay. Mm-hmm. And that's usually the same crowd that will say that we should have done something to get this kid from North Korea. They both went to places that they shouldn't have gone on their own action.
Yeah.
If you don't know that you shouldn't go to North Korea, there's a problem there. And I don't think that we should give up lifting sanctions on North Korea to get the kid back. Like, what do you want to do? Like, you can't say, I don't want to negotiate with terrorists, which is something that's fucking ridiculous anyways. We do it all the time. Like people who have the idea because they've watched so many movies that we don't negotiate with terrorists, we 100% do. We are in active negotiation with the Taliban now. We have been for years on how to get things done there. Mm-hmm. We've, like, terroristic regimes, we've done that for years.
Yeah.
I don't think that you should lift sanctions on North Korea or even loosen them because there's a kid who made a decision, and not even a kid, a grown man who made the decision to go to North Korea on his own accord. If they came into China and kidnapped him and brought him there,
that's different
or something
story.
Like that.
Yeah, if they came across a DMZ and captured one of our soldiers, that different story altogether.
There, man. Like, he went there.
Yeah.
Like, you're going there, you know why. You're briefed before you go there, no matter what agency you're going through, what could happen to you. And then you make those steps, and then everybody's supposed to jump through a hoop for you. That's not how it works.
No.
And I don't think it's how it should work.
No, and I don't think we want to get in the habit of bending to North Korea's demands either, because when you're dealing with such a volatile nation, I think you give them an inch, they're going to take 10 miles. So we can't start forming bad habits like that.
What do you think the news coverage would have been if, as soon as that kid gets taken, that Obama's like, okay, we're gonna loosen some of the sanctions on North Korea to get this kid back?
Right.
I mean, because we have complete 100% shutdown. No economy goes there. Mm-mm. We don't want our trade partners to do anything that goes there. You can't ramp things up from zero.
Yeah, and I don't think this shouldn't be a Obama versus Trump discussion. I don't care who's in the office.
Common sense versus not common sense.
Exactly. That's it. That's all it comes down to. So these people, you know, that always want to make it about, oh, you're supporting Trump or you're not supporting Trump, and, you know, what would Obama have done? I don't care, man. This is just not good diplomacy to go and to lift sanctions and to negotiate with such, as I've mentioned now twice, a volatile nation.
Yeah, I agree. Another thing happened big time this week. F-18, one of those fucking nerds, shot down a Syrian pilot. They went after it, straight up Top Gun. First time in a long time that that's gone down. That was pretty exciting.
Yeah,
I
absolutely.
I imagine that that community, the sniper community and the fighter pilot community, has got to be, like, super stoked right
Yeah,
now.
They're pumped, especially the pilot community, because the haters and the losers will say that we don't give pilots their proper due on this show. And they would be wrong because, I mean, it was impressive. I mean, as you mentioned, first time we've shot down a manned airplane since 1999. So, you know, that's 18 years, almost two decades, we haven't shot
that's
someone down.
That's math. Shout out to West Point.
Boom. You know, and that's got to be aggravating for all these pilots, too. You know, you go to all this training, you go to all this schooling to be the best of the best in the world to fly these multi-million dollar pieces of equipment, and you never really, like, to get to, like, open them up and, you know, see what they're made of. Obviously, they shoot at targets, and missiles are expensive, so that probably doesn't happen as much, but that's got to be a good feeling, no? To know that, like, everything you trained for, you got to utilize.
Yeah, I've said that plenty of times, and I'm sure you feel the same way. Like, it's a terrible thing to really say out loud, but if I would have been in the Marine Corps as long as I had and I had never deployed, I would have felt like that all I did was go to football practice and never play
right.
a game.
Right.
Like, it's a bad analogy to make, but that's the analogy that people understand. Like, you just would go to practice for fucking 9 years and never playing a game. Like, you want to do that. Like, if you're a fighter pilot, you want to get into the shit a little bit, and this dude did. I'm sure he's a fucking legend.
Yeah.
Some stuff has come up since then, though, like Russia saying that if our guys are in the area again, that they're going to shoot us down.
Yeah.
Like, things are getting wild, man.
But that's crap, because, again, the other thing that I think our pilots do such a great job of is exercising the rules of engagement, and they're not just looking for things they can shoot. I mean, the Pentagon released a statement that said that the Syrian jets, they had bombed U.S.-backed forces that were fighting ISIS in Syria, and so we spun up some of our jets to do a strafing run, and then as we were about to do the strafing run, the Syrian planes popped up, and they were coming towards our planes, and they made multiple attempts that said, hey, you know, this is not what you want to do, and we could tell, as the statement, the Pentagon spokesman said, I actually never heard this term before because I'm not a pilot, but I thought it was pretty cool. They had dirty wings, meaning they were carrying ordnance, and they were going to drop that ordnance. They said they did a headbutt maneuver. They launched flares. If anybody knows what a headbutt maneuver is, please tweet at us what a headbutt maneuver is, because that sounds pretty cool. But ultimately, they said that the Syrian planes went in to dive to drop that ordnance, and they said, you know what? Not on our watch. Blew them out of the sky. Pilot ejected, but nonetheless, that's pretty badass to shoot a plane out of the thin air like that.
Oh, I bet. I bet it's like the biggest rush you could possibly have.
Right?
It'd be amazing.
Right? And then, again, two decades, so it's not like there's a lot of guys around the squadron that you could talk about, like, oh, what was it like when you shot down this plane? You are ultimate hero status.
If that was me and I was that nerd pilot, I would get the biggest conference room on base and be like, all right, I'm going to have a meeting with everybody else who has ever shot down an enemy plane from the sky. And then just start tweeting out pictures of me in the room by myself.
Empty room, just you.
Yeah, you should post, like, take a picture of what the sign says on the door. Anybody who shot down enemy plane can come in here, and then it's just me in the room, and I just do, like, Periscope from there, just me sitting,
right?
Drinking.
And then maybe, like,
you know what I'd be drinking?
What?
I'd be drinking Black Rifle Coffee, because
that'd be a great
it's delicious,
choice.
And it's veteran-owned. So if I'm a veteran, I want to support veteran causes like veteran-owned coffee, such as Black Rifle. Going to Disney, made a huge mistake, didn't bring my Black Rifle coffee.
Rookie mistake.
Very rookie mistake. It's one of the things I hate the most about leaving. Like, I fucking hate it. Like, even when I go to New York, because the coffee that I make, the cold brew coffee that I make at home, is by far the best coffee.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it just really is stronger, because even when you get cold brew coffee, other places they add water and shit like that to it, which it just like water after it's done. It makes it weaker. Starbucks is notorious for that.
Right.
Make your own at home by using Black Rifle Coffee. Use the promo code ZBT10 and you'll get 10% off all the time. Do that. Do that a lot. Get as much coffee as you want. They got cool ass names. It smells great. It's strong roast. You'll be buzzing all day. You probably won't even need more than like one or two cups. I don't. If I have more than two cups of it, my heart starts racing really fast. Go to blackrifle.coffee.com. Get it. Get it. Get it. ZBT10. All right. Now let's shift into Band of Brothers. Hit the theme music with the Band of Brothers. I love this theme music so much.
You said that last week, but it makes sense. You could say it every time. I don't even care. It's that good.
It's so good. It just gives you like a feel like where you're sitting down and it's still going and you're like, oh, shit.
You know what I think it does a good job of, too? You know what I think it does a good job of, though, too? It does a great job of reminding you of the magnitude of what these gentlemen did. Right? Mm-hmm. I just, it's just so fitting and so perfect. But episode 5 opens right with our boy, Winners. And he said such an all-time, I mean, he was speaking, and then I thought he said such a great quote when he was talking about leadership. Presumably, the interviewer asked them, what's a good leader? And then they asked the other soldiers, was Winners
a good
leader?
I wish they had the name. That, if I could critique one thing, I wish it had the little nameplate caption of who they were.
Do you want a spoiler?
Yeah.
They do that at the end. So you
thank
know.
God, dude, because I want to know who. Man.
Yeah. I was going to ask you that
so
the other week.
People are watching. I bet when people are watching the first time, they didn't know that it was those people. So it's not me being a fucking idiot that I didn't pick up on it the first one.
No, that's not, I think, that uncommon. And I've seen this now tons of times, so I know who everyone is when they're speaking.
Oh.
But all right,
now I'm going to have to watch it again knowing that.
Right. So, all right. So, episode 5, the first guy who speaks with that white hair, with that really good head of hair, that's Winners.
Okay.
And he says, if you're a good leader, you lead the way. And not just on the easy ones, on the tough ones, too.
I had a feeling that with him. Yeah. Like when I was putting it, I was like, that sounds like a Winners quote.
Right. And then one of his soldiers, he said, he never thought about not being first. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's the, you know, in my opinion, I think that's the only way to lead from the front.
Yeah, that reminds me of Mel Gibson and We Were Soldiers when he's like, I will be the first one on the field, and I will be the last one off.
Yeah.
Just that good leadership mentality, man.
Absolutely.
I love the part. Are you done?
I just wanted to mention that. I thought it was good.
Yeah, that was a great quote.
Great quote.
I love how the actual episode, once they got through the actual gentleman speaking, how that started off where he throws the bottle of piss.
Yes! Yes!
The piss on him.
Yes! Like, oh, that's my own piss!
That's my own piss, man.
And Winners couldn't help but just laugh at him. But
then they go from, like, normal people. I feel like normal people, non-troops, like, non-military, you get piss thrown on you, you're probably going to hold a grudge for
a bit. Right.
They go right into their car together, probably with still piss-covered hair.
Yeah.
And they act like nothing weird.
No, they're just talking about the tactics of the war and how, you know, they could potentially be done by March. It was unbelievable. But, yeah, you see, even back in World War II, they used piss bottles.
Yeah.
Tale as old as time.
It's as military as clean-shaven and getting a nice haircut.
Right.
So I wanted you to explain a little bit what Winters, whenever they're in one of the battles in episode 5, he uses the phrase fire for effect.
Right.
As an artillery officer, God. Explain what fire for effect is.
Man, this episode, I love it, this part. So they get the two companies of Germans, and they realize, okay, we've started a fire on them, but now we need artillery. So he gets on the radio, and all of that language he's telling someone on the other end, an artillery unit, he's telling them where the enemy is. And what's impressive is on a map, we have predetermined areas where we can fire. So there was a predetermined area where he wanted to fire. So he said, I believe it was right 100, drop 200. And that's telling them from that designated area, phase line yellow, I think was the line, to shift. And then he made one shift and then went right into fire for effect. Fire for effect is when you know, okay, we got these guns on target. Now just unleash hell on them. Everything you got.
You would drop in one,
right?
Or
yes,
two,
one or two. Like, see where it lands, and then you have to adjust.
Like BZOing, like
yes,
a Battle Zone Zero. Like.
Yeah, exactly. That's all it is. And then you have to adjust to see. All right, it landed here. All right, where's our actual target? All right, now. But he just did it right away and started dropping Steel Rain right on their heads. And he says, "Krauts in the open." What that means is whenever you're telling the artillery, you have to describe your target. So that's what he was saying when he was saying Krauts in the open. It tells them what type
open
of
field.
Yeah, in the open field, what type of munitions to use. So they were using high explosive, and they were just, like I said, they were just raining steel on top of their heads, and that was extremely impressive that he was able to do one adjustment off a phase line and then just completely annihilate two companies worth of Germans.
So back then, like artillery, I'm not sure if you'll know this. I am sure you will know this. So whenever you're talking about a grid point, now we use targets, like whenever we're talking about where we want to drop zone, we use a 10-digit grid.
Right.
Which will get you inside of 1 meter.
Right.
Then what was his range? Well, what do you think it could have got him within?
I'm sorry, I don't understand the question.
Like the target, like would he be a 6-digit grid? Like would he be taking out that little?
Yeah,
area?
No, it was probably a 6-digit grid, maybe
so like
an 8-digit.
Within 100,
right?
Or
yeah.
10 or 100.
I think it was 10 or 100 because they knew it was going to be a big area, and there was a big. They said it was the crossroads, so they knew it was going to be a big area. So I'd imagine it'd be as you get less numbers. This is a little difficult to discuss, but on military maps, there's little squares, and that's what we're talking when we're talking grids. And the more numbers you give, so a 10-digit grid in this case, you're able to be more accurate up to a meter, all the way down to like a 4-digit grid is a pretty big.
It's a crapshoot.
Yeah, it's a crapshoot. You know, you're within 1,000 meters all the way down to 1 meter. So he's probably working with he's probably working with a 6-digit grid, which again, made.
With how close he was like pretty sure.
Yeah, they were pretty danger close also. You know, he's calling for fire almost on his head.
Explain what danger close is.
So danger close, each munition that we use has a kill radius. And you know what type of munitions they're going to be using, and you know what that kill radius is. Obviously, they were only like, I'm going to say, 40 to 50 meters. They were almost within the kill radius.
They're in the casualty radius.
For sure. And, you know, what danger close means is I'm putting this close enough that it could potentially harm friendly forces. So
you know that whenever he's asking for it. He knows that he's in an area where his guys could go down too.
Right.
And they all know that when they hear him calling it in. They all know it too.
Right. So, I mean, when they finished up the battle and they mentioned how many Germans they had killed, how many they took capture, and they only lost one of their soldiers, Nix, Lieutenant Nix, or Captain Nix, made it, you know, he said, you know, one person for all of those, it's not a bad trade. I mean, there's going to be casualties in war, so if you can eliminate
and
that many of the
enemy. And I think that would be that's the difference between now and then.
Yes.
I don't think that you would hear somebody say that now.
No, not at all.
But with what they went through at Normandy, one casualty wasn't a lot.
For a battle,
now when
not
a
at
unit
all.
Gets hit, it's a much, much different type of battle, much different type of war. One thing that I really loved seeing about Winter is that he got promoted. He started out as a platoon commander. Then he went up to the company commander to take easy company. And then he got promoted up again to the executive officer. And whenever he got promoted and was told that he was executive officer, most people in life, whenever you get promoted at work, you're pretty fucking happy about it. Like,
right.
You feel pride about it, like you're stoked, usually because it comes with a pay raise. His didn't this time.
Yeah. And also, battlefield commissions aren't really common, if they happen at all these days. Obviously, things were different during World War II.
Yeah, I think things were different then. But you could see the pain on his face when he was told.
Right.
He did what he was told. He accepted the promotion from his superior officer, which he should have done. But you could see that he was upset about leaving the men that he had fought so hard with after such an iconic spot, such a big event, which got him the promotion. But leaving right after that must have been extremely difficult.
Right, yeah. I mean, he was the only company commander to lead easy in combat. So you have a special bond with those men. Obviously, he had a special bond already from coming all the way through training, but then he almost felt, it was like part of him felt like he was abandoning them.
Yeah.
Mind you, like, Moose Heiliger was a great replacement for him, and he said to Colonel Sink, like, you know, he would have been my choice too. So he felt like Easy was in capable hands, but part of him didn't want to let go.
Yeah, and you never want to give that up, and you never think that somebody's going to come in and do as good a job as you. Mm-hmm. Like, you want to have that attitude as a leader.
Yeah, but speaking of Moose Heiliger, the part of the episode that I also liked was when they did that mission to retrieve the captured British soldiers, and then they were in the barn celebrating that night, and the British commander gives the toast to Easy Company. And I just thought that was a really cool thing, kind of warmed my heart.
Nice little hat tip, yeah.
Yeah, that was nice to see that.
So we'll move on and get to the point where they're preparing for Bastogne. One of the things that really caught me at the end of episode 5 was, one, whenever the unit were leaving Bastogne and they were just trying to take all their ammunition, and the other guys were leaving were like, fucking take it, man.
Yeah,
I don't want to go back
be
there.
Here. No.
And then when he tells them, we're paratroopers, we're supposed to be surrounded.
Yeah.
That was a dope moment. That reminded me of whenever Chesty Puller once said that if we're surrounded, that simplifies the problem, like of finding where the enemy is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Did you notice that was Jimmy Fallon that he said that to?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, yep. Yeah,
yeah. Weird casting choice there.
Yeah,
he did good,
very.
But it's weird because you expect him to be like, hey, I'm Jimmy Fallon. Here is Justin Timberlake.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. But you know what I thought, and I don't know if you noticed this or not, but to end the episode, they focus in on Winters' face. And to me, his face said, my God, these odds are against us, but I wouldn't want to be with anybody else, so let's do it. And it's just unbelievable.
You know, and it kind of reminded me of when Rob O'Neill was on here talking about when they were getting ready to go get Bin Laden. Like, there are certain missions that you know are just so important, and that you know that you are probably going to die. And it seemed like that's what Winter had really resigned himself to. Whenever we kick off episode 6, whenever they had the actual real-life gentleman in there, amazing to me that damn near 50 years later when they recorded this, they could barely say the name Bastogne without crying or getting choked up.
Yeah, and the guy says he could still feel how cold it was. He's like, yeah, I'm glad I'm not in Bastogne. Even on cold nights, I'm glad I'm not in Bastogne. Because you have to think about that. You know, think about the coldest you've ever been, our listeners. Think about the coldest you have ever been. But you know there's some sort of end in sight. You know you're going to get in your car and go home, or you're going to be home and you can take a hot shower. These guys were just freezing cold with little to no proper winter clothing, and they just didn't know when that was going to end. So the misery that they must have felt, but nonetheless, they just dug their foxholes and they were prepared to fight.
Like, they were running out of ammunition. They were running out of medical supplies, of gauze, of morphine, of plasma for, like, to get any type of blood in your body. They were running out of everything, and they hadn't even really begun the battle yet.
No.
Like, they were already almost out of stuff. And there was a loom flares going on at night, which really fucks up your sleeping pattern, especially if you're trying to get any sleep when you're in a foxhole or a fighting position. To perfectly illustrate what is a common phrase that we use, and I'm not sure if you guys use it exactly the same way, when the general comes out, no more clear description of mission accomplishment is greater than troop welfare.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when he's saying that you will hold the line, and the officers are saying, we need more people to hold the line here, we have gaps in our perimeter. The brigadier general is saying, I don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
Accomplish the mission.
Just get it done.
And they're saying, our guys are cold. We're running out of food. We don't have hot stuff. We don't have water. Get it done. And then he doesn't wait for a yes, sir, or anything like that. Yes, general, from the officers. He gets his ass back in his Jeep and leaves, knowing that that job is going to get done, because mission accomplishment is greater than troop welfare.
Mm-hmm. No, it's unbelievable, too, just because he knew he wanted to get them reinforcements through the air, but he couldn't do anything about the weather. So he's like, give it to me straight. I think so he would have an awareness of what was going on in the battlefield. But But then he's like, yeah, well, that's all well and good. And I don't think they were complaining. They were just telling him flat out, like, what the situation was. And he's like, man, all right, get the mission done. Thanks.
Yeah, because you can't do that either. As the leader of men and women in combat, you can't just, like, blow smoke up your superiors. Ask, be like, hey, yeah, we're doing great. Like, you got to give it to them.
Got
to
give them the no BS answer.
Yeah, like, give me an update on what you have. We don't have shit.
Yeah, yeah. One thing that always sticks out to me in the beginning of this episode, though, too, Winters is using his bayonet to chop up the ice so he can shave. It's like, hey.
Yes, dude.
Hey.
I was like, that's such a fucking officer thing to do.
Right? Like, no one's going to care if you like, didn't have time to shave today. It's freezing cold. You don't have.
Until a Marine colonel comes around. Right. Those bitches will fucking bit you out for anything.
Right. But, I mean.
I like that, though, that he was still doing.
He's consummate professional.
And not just that, but it is the small things. Mm-hmm. And it shows his guys, like, the meticulous details are what matter out here.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the reason why we have room inspections the way we do. We have uniform inspections the way we do. Every single thing matters to the smallest detail. An instant willing obedience to orders. Because if you're not shaving, you're not doing every little thing right. And mm-hmm. He is being in our promotion warrant. I wish I had one close by. There's a line in the Marine Corps promotion warrant. I'm sure something similar in the Army. Calling you to be above reproach.
Yep.
Like the people who are subordinate to you. That's exactly what he was doing. Because if he wasn't shaven, he would no longer be above reproach. Mm-hmm. Someone could say, look at Captain Winter. He didn't even shave today.
Right.
He was being above reproach by having every little thing done that he possibly could. Mm-hmm. Huge respect for that.
Absolutely. And then the one line that always made me laugh in this episode when the doc, who had a hell of a job to make sure that these guys were staying battle ready, but he's walking around, he's talking to Garnier, he's like, how's the leg? And he goes, the hell with the leg, I'm pissing needles over here, doc.
Yeah. And that goes to show that every military conversation eventually is going to go back to the penis.
Like, yes.
Almost always. One thing that really stuck out to me, differences between our wars in Iraq and Afghanistan and theirs, I was never in a hospital that looked anything like
theirs.
When I got shot, I went to a nice hospital with clean floors, clean walls that had surgical equipment that was sterilized. There was a TV in there. They went to a fucking bombed out church hanging out with some nurses from different countries that spoke mm-hmm. different languages trying mm-hmm. to just piece together things. What the people in World War II went through, and that's with like sucking chest wounds, that's with everything, man. Like
that stuff that requires extremely detailed and high medical attention, and they're just doing it kind of just with like duct tape and cloth and not much to speak of, really. But that just goes to show how impressive those nurses were, and you know, the cleanliness factor just out the window. Because I can remember, even out of my outpost, we built an aid station. Granted, we built it from nothing, but it was very clean, everything was orderly.
You had the supplies that you needed if somebody's coming in there.
No matter what, we could treat them.
Yeah, you had all your shit. And if not, unless there was like a crazy dust storm or something, you could get them to a hospital relatively quickly.
Right.
They didn't have that option there.
Did you pick up the fact that they didn't have morphine, so they were just giving the soldiers booze to numb
the pain?
Yeah, I love
that.
Yeah.
Which is honestly what they would probably have preferred anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, take your mind off. Because his face, as soon as he takes the first little sip of whiskey, he's like, oh, fuck yeah.
Yeah, this is good. This is good stuff.
Yeah.
And that nurse, I don't know why, but I love the way the French say chocolate when she just kept saying
chocolat.
Chocolat. Yeah. I don't know, I just really like that.
Chocolat.
Yeah, but bummer, though. I mean, obviously, the hospital or quasi makeshift hospital gets bombed and that nurse is ultimately killed. It highlighted once again the relationship she had with Easy's medic. They had a nice little relationship there, nothing too deep, but they shared a few moments. Mm-hmm. And then next thing you know, she's gone. So it's
And it was really sad whenever Winter noticed that the medic is like really fucked up, like he's getting to the point where he might reach a mental break. So Winter sent him back home, and then as soon as he gets back into town, the battle is still there.
Yeah.
Like the battle in this episode, I wasn't there. It was only 55 minutes long on my TV screen, but it felt like it was fucking forever.
Yeah. And I mean, the fact that they had to spend Christmas there, They had to spend Christmas wondering if they were going to get shelled by artillery. And when you think about artillery, artillery blows like up and out. So that's why you're in a foxhole to, you know, unless the round lands right in the foxhole, you should conceivably be okay. But then you got all these trees all around. So you think about artillery, bombs these trees, and then all these trees are splintering off with all these, what amounts to like spears that are running around. Or not running around, but coming at you at a high rate of speed that could potentially kill you. So if the artillery doesn't get you, the shrapnel from the trees and the actual round, very dangerous. So to have to sit through that Christmas, not exactly a good memory. So can you imagine, like, though, just from there on, the rest of your life, you celebrating Christmas and everyone around you is having a jolly old time, and Christmas just automatically reminds you of Bastogne?
Amazing, man. Like, just the things that they would have had to do for the rest of their life to get over that. It's just incredible.
Yep.
Incredible. Well, next week we'll get into episodes 7 and 8. It's been a joy. I've enjoyed going through.
Yeah, I have too.
It's been a good time. Hopefully our listeners have enjoyed it too.
I mean, I've watched it, as I've mentioned, plenty of times, but I've never discussed it at this length. So it's really been, although this is, I don't know, maybe the 25th time I've seen this series, it's the most enjoyable because I'm able to have this discussion out loud, which is great. And if there's anything we've missed that you're curious about, just shoot us a note and we'll be happy to talk about it.
Yeah, maybe after the end we'll have one final episode where we'll do like 10 or 15 minutes on save rounds or alibis
for the entire series. Great idea.
Where you guys can tell us your favorite parts. Yeah, so if you guys want to send in shit to us to talk about on the last episode, thing that you feel like we missed, let us know, and we'd love to do that. All right, so we want to shift gears a little bit and recognize the 7 Navy members who lost their lives, those sailors. Been a tough week for losses for the Navy. Some of the details that came out about this are incredibly sad. If you want to read more about it, Thomas Gibbons, who was one of the guys who came on our show from the Washington Post, he did a great article about what actually happened. Really, really sad situation. But the people who lost their lives this week were Gunner's Mate Seaman Dakota Kyle Rigsby. He was 19. He's from Palmer, Virginia. Yeoman Third Class Shingo Alexander Douglas. He's 25, from San Diego. Sonar Technician Third Class. I hope I don't butcher this name. Nok Yun. He's 25, from Oakville, Connecticut. Gunner's Mate, Second Class, Noel Hernandez. He's from Waslaco, Texas. Fireman Controlman, Second Class, Victor Sabayan, 23. He's from Chula Vista, California. And Personnel Specialist, First Class, Xavier Martin, 24, from Hawthorne, Maryland. And Fire Controlman, First Class, Gary Ream, Jr. He was 37, from Elmira, Ohio. Fair winds and flowing seas, gentlemen. Any save rounds or alibis, Connor?
I got nothing.
All right, man. It was a great, great, great time. We hope you guys come back again for episodes 7 and 8. Next week, we'll do that. I also want to give a special shout out to Sean Doolittle, who's the pitcher for the A's. Sean and I talked for 30 minutes on Wednesday, but because I fucked up something, it didn't actually show up. Like, my side was recorded. But it would have been a really terrible interview if you just heard my questions and none of his great answers. We're going to try to record that this week. But Sean, if you're listening, I appreciate your time, man. You're doing great work. We're going to talk with him eventually. If it's not this week, it'll be next week or sometime soon, about the work that he's doing with veterans who struggle with PTSD, who have bad paperwork, like a bad conduct discharge or an other than honorable condition discharge, which causes people not to be able to get VA treatment. PTSD Awareness Day is coming up. Connor and I both urge you, if you're a veteran, if you're not a veteran, if you're listening and you're having mental issues or you're having mental stresses such as depression or anxiety, seek out the help that you need. I have clinical depression. I have PTSD. I get help. It doesn't show a sign of weakness to get help. It shows a sign of strength. Go see somebody. See somebody today. If you need to, hit up me and Connor on Twitter. Hit up the ZBT and we will get back to you. I promise you on that. Cheers. Sound the retreat.
Hey everybody, this is Spike Ferriston from Spike's Car Radio. We're out here in the porch at the Malibu Kitchen at the Malibu Country Mart every weekend doing podcasts. My first guest is Jerry Seinfeld. He's right here. We're going to have Jeremy Piven. We're going to have Chris Hardwick. See you soon on Spike's Car Radio.
I think he's over-projecting for a podcast.
And I love to over-project for podcasts.